Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, July the 24th, 2009.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
USDA can't win for losing. The folks at NASS this week announced 7 corn states would be surveyed again for the August crop production report. Not everybody's pleased with that decision. Matters not to us, other than we get to guess again at the corn acreage. We'll discuss it and so much more today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today are Jackie Vakes of the Stuart Peterson Group out of Champaign, Illinois, Wyatt Muse of Clarkson Grain from Cerro Gordo, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. Jackie Vakes, why did corn fail to maintain momentum into Friday's trade after the initial euphoria over the NASS decision to survey corn acres in 7 states, including number 2 producer, Illinois?
Well, I think primarily because what we saw yesterday was a lot of weak shorts who were jumping out of their positions, looking to see what was going to go on. And then when today we didn't have good follow-through after the open, they decided to go back onto the short side. You know, let's face it, there's been nothing that's been threatening to this crop. And so there has been very little to trade. This was something to trade yesterday.
Bill Mayer?
I think that's an excellent point on the weak shorts in the market, and I would say that's one of the things. I think there are several things. I think the other was that there probably wasn't a huge surprise there. I mean, I think that there had been a lot of talk about the fact they could resurvey, and we have actually had a change in the acres on the August report, I think 5 out of the last 11 years or something like that. And lastly, I think that there was, when the market moved up 20 cents and we saw that kind of a move, there was a lot of farmers with old crop grain, that old crop corn, that dumped it on the market because they'd been waiting for that.
And Wyatt Muse.
Well, the bulls needed a feel-good day, and we're all bulls here as corn growers in Illinois, but the path of least resistance has been to the downside, and feels like the bears have a lot of money in their pockets, and they continue to attack the market from the short side. I think the bulls are going to need to see some actual proof rather than just an announcement that the USDA is going to conduct this resurvey. If you take it a step further than just the order flow and look at what would a reduction in corn acres actually do, still the wild card out there is going to be yield. But if you take the 87 million acres that NASS told us were planted in June, and take last year's corn yield at 153.9, that gets us to a 13.389 billion crop. And then if you take that crop and back it off on 04's record yield at 160, we could lose 3.3 million acres and still end up with the same amount of bushels in the bin at the end of the year. So I think that's also playing into it. And so depending how this crop comes out, we could afford to lose some corn acres.
And therein lies the critical thinking that means that you're over there in that seat. Welcome back, by the way, to Commodity Week, Mr. Muse. Can you tell us where you're at, what Clarkson Grain does?
Yes, Clarkson Grain is based out of Cerro Gordo, Illinois, and we operate in the commodity world for, you know, number 2 corn, number 1 soys, but specialize in identity preserved grains specifically for human food consumption.
It's good to have you back on Commodity Week. Bill Mayer, I think the last time you were on Commodity Week, which wasn't very long ago, I didn't bother to let folks know that you were back after a little hiatus from this program. You are now with Strategic Farm Marketing.
Yeah, Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. We're a crop insurance and marketing consulting company. I think the niche that Strategic Farm Marketing provides is that they can put those two risk management tools together and provide a total risk management program for the farmer. Good group of guys. I'm glad to be there.
Now, Wyatt gave us some numbers and some idea of what he thinks might happen in that crop production report on the acreage and how it might play out. What do you see?
Well, I guess I may disagree a little bit as far, or just for the sake of argument, maybe. I certainly don't want to say that we can't have crop like we had in 2004, but I've seen numbers thrown around here in the last couple of weeks, anywhere from 157 to 163 on the average national yield. And one thing, we see a lot of comparisons with 2004 and 1994, which were both cool summers, and there definitely is some correlation there from that standpoint. But we should keep in mind that the crop planting progress in May 20th in 1994, we were at 92% done. In 2004, we were at 93% done. And this year, we were about 72% done. So I think there's still a difference there that could come into play before we get through the year.
Well, and I certainly agree with Bill. I think, and especially when you look at the temperature situation that we've got going on, you know, they came out today and said, here in Illinois, we've had the coolest July in 114 years. Iowa, which everybody thinks is just the garden place, is actually behind on growing degree days, not by a tremendous amount. They're at 1681 compared to 1730. But the significant thing is they've never had record yields unless they were above 1700 at this point in time, and 1730 was their highest for this particular day. Illinois is sitting at 1568, our normal 1740. That's significantly different. And we've had our record yields when we hit 1783 today and 1814, and we don't even know from a standpoint of how accurate this is in relationship to when we actually planted.
No, Wyatt, any buts on the rebuttal there?
Certainly can't disagree, because the crop's not in the bin yet, so not implying that the corn's definitely out there, but I know the 04 year was only 5 years ago, but I think as a producer, if everyone sits back and takes an honest look at what kind of crop is satisfactory and what kind of crop is deemed as excellent today versus 04, our yield potential through technology and practice is so much higher than it was even in 04, I think there's good possibility of reaching it.
Now, from the corn pit, futures finished like this for the week. September corn had a high of 328 and a quarter. A low at $3.04, settled despite the midweek rally, 6 cents lower at 3.16 and a quarter. And December futures at $3.27 and a quarter, finished down 4 and a quarter from last week. Those numbers, I don't suppose, surprised a whole lot of people, but is there much downside left in the marketplace?
Well, I think when you look at the marketplace, you have to recognize that we're inching our way toward the end of our normal 15-year seasonals, which is a standard downtrend. We haven't gotten to that point. We've got non-threatening weather, and when you look at a weekly chart, a continuous weekly December chart tells us that 310 is a target and 290 is there, and sometimes at this time of year, even if it wouldn't be necessarily a justified number, it's a target. It's there to be reached.
And so because it's a target, they'll aim for it. You agree with that?
Yeah, I think Jackie hit the targets exactly there, 290, 310. And going back to our discussion, I think the key there, we can discuss what we think yields could be, but the trade right now is locked into a pretty high yield number, and I think that's where they're at. And there's nothing in the weather or nothing other than this change in the resurvey this week that anybody who's on the bullish side of the market really has to grab onto. And the other thing that we've already mentioned, I think you'll continue to see corn, if we do see some bounces higher, continue to see corn hit the market.
Does it strike you at all that the cash price that the WASDE numbers gave in June is so much higher, Wyatt, than what we have at this point? And does it make much difference to you that USDA was thinking that supply and demand would, while it was under, I think the average was under $4, it was certainly not nearly as low as we are at this point.
You know, I don't know that the WASDE numbers matter nearly as much as the big players in the market, and that goes back to the funds. The announcement made by Gary Gensler from the CFTC on July 7th to enhance transparency and limit spec limits is probably a bigger deal to me than anything. And we saw it again with the Commitment of Traders report this week that the funds just are slowly pulling their money out of the grains market. And the CFTC is going to limit their activity, especially on the corn. I think there's room for it to go down.
Well, does that not mean that simply they will roll out of what normally are long positions. And so the market would go down, but it would be an artificial down, and we should be able to bounce back off of that a long way.
Artificial is a pretty strong word, because an artificial down would mean we were in an artificial up when they were buying into it. So I regard them as a legitimate player in the market just as much as a producer or a consumer. So they're part of the market for us to deal with, but regardless, unless you have someone coming in here that really wants to buy this market, and apparently we're going to have excessive supply given what the USDA has told us. So unfortunately, I'd like to have bullish news here, but that part of it does not make me friendly corn prices.
I think ag economist Scott Irwin would agree with you. He would say that no matter how big the money is that's coming in, it's bought or sold at certain levels, but doesn't move the marketplace, and that's based off the fundamentals. Although I'm not sure that everybody that sits across the other side of the table from me in the studio always agrees with that point.
I think though that's a key. I think that's a quandary that's in the trade right now. Is it? Are we looking at a situation? If you look at a long historical span, we have seen times where that fundamental picture results in a higher level of trade price wise than what. For example, when beans went from $2 to, average prices of $4 to $5 years ago, are we looking at one of those situations where we've moved the new fundamental picture results of price up, or is this just are we going to go back to where we were previously in the past decade where 1.5 carryout meant $2.50 corn?
And so that would be called a new plateau most of the time. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think that we have enough information to know that yet. But I think that going back to Wyatt's comments about the funds getting out, I think that they could push us down to some levels that we'd have to see whether the demand comes into the market like we had a year or so ago whenever we saw this market moving higher.
How do you see? Do you see the place changing over time? I mean, what's changed? What's different, new, interesting to you? I mean, in the concept of new plateau and different players with the speculators in, out, regulation, all those sorts of things.
Well, I can't help but go back and think about something Scott Stewart told me when I started 12 years ago. And I mean, 12 years is still 12 years. Back then he said, remember one thing and one thing only. Fundamentals start the contract, fundamentals end the contract, and everything else in between is technicals. And so is that really much different than where we are today? I don't think so, because when you look at the market being guided, and now what we've added to the plate is, of course, energies, the American dollar, the Dow Jones. You know, so have they put a twist in there? Yes, but technicals still really drive this market. That's why, you know, when we talk about going to 290 on December corn, perhaps.
Right.
Does that mean we'll be at 290 throughout the crop year this next year? Not necessarily.
And, so, and really, the fundamentals compared to 18 months ago or a year ago, macro, globally, the only thing that changed is we've gone through an economic recession, and China seems to have their economic engine going again here and some of that. So I'm not so sure that we've changed all the global demand factors other than short term, maybe.
Well, I know we haven't touched on beans yet, but take a look. I mean, we're looking at the shortest stocks, 110 million bushel carryout on beans. We're going. And suddenly it's like every bean in the world came from someplace when you look at the market. But did they really? No. We don't see basis totally crashing. We don't see any of that. So, you know, you have to be careful about how much you identify with the daily activity as being having a relationship to the true fundamentals in the marketplace. And you know, when you if you're looking for something that kind of gives us a little bit of hope in the grain market in terms of support, you get a look at world supply. We got dry Canada. The former Soviet Union's extremely dry. Argentina's dry. Northern Europe's too wet. Are we talking about any of that right now? No.
On occasion, but not often.
Not
often do we talk about it. And this on Friday's show, we talked about Wisconsin. Actually, Wisconsin's suffering a drought, and so is parts of Minnesota.
Yes.
Which I don't think it's much play. I know I haven't had much play here on my program, so I suppose there are things yet to talk about in the marketplace. You said fundamentals start the contracts and they end the contract, maybe with one exception. That would be wheat at this point, so we'll give you those numbers. The soft bread, anyway. The convergence remains a problem there. September, a high this week of 553 and three quarters, a low at 513 and a quarter. Settlement price at 516 and a quarter, down 25 and a half cents. July of next year, that's the harvest month, at $5.84. And it finished the day down 22 and a quarter, rather the week in the wheat pit down 22 and a quarter. Some other numbers that we probably ought to look at and we'll talk about in the second half of the program include the September oats, $1.95 their settlement price. They were below $2 this week as they finished out. That's the second time in the last couple of months. Down 20 and a quarter from the previous week. We'll talk more about the commodity markets when we return with Commodity Week. It is a publication of Illinois Public Media, public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, our guest in studio, Jackie Vakes, Wyatt Muse, and Bill Mayer.
I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist here at the Illinois State Water Survey within the new Institute of Natural Resource Sustainability on the campus of the University of Illinois. Overall, this week has been cool and dry with temperatures 10 degrees below normal. Most of Illinois received less than an inch of rain during the week. The exceptions were far northern and southern Illinois, where locally heavy amounts of 2 to 3 inches were reported. By the way, normal for this time of year is about an inch per week. July is shaping up to be one of the coldest on records if the current trends continue. So far, the average temperature for the month is 70 degrees, which is 6 degrees below normal. Rainfall stands at 3.7 inches, 0.9 inches above normal. In addition, we've seen a lack of hot weather in July. Most of the northern two-thirds of the state have not seen 90 degrees yet. Southern Illinois has seen only a handful of days. This is definitely good news for corn pollination. According to the National Weather Service, the cool, dry weather should continue for the next 2 weeks. The only chance of rain is on Saturday, and the amounts are not expected to be heavy. Temperatures will remain below normal, with highs in the 70s and 80s and lows in the 60s. The long-term outlook for both August and the three-month period of August through October calls for an increased chance of below-normal temperatures and near-normal rainfall. El Nino conditions will continue to develop and are expected to last through winter. Historically, the impacts are not felt until winter, when we sometimes see milder conditions with less cold weather and snow. For the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign, I'm state climatologist Jim Angel.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, July the 24th, 2009. Our panelists in studio, Wyatt Muse of Clarkson Grain, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing, and Jackie Vakes of the Stuart Peterson Group. When we left, we were talking just about a bit about the wheat market, and maybe the question we ought to be asking for wheat at this point, Bill, is not about the marketplace, but about the acre program and wheat in Illinois and other parts of the world. You've been calculating some numbers?
Yeah, I'm just kind of looking at the acre program, and of course you can make assumptions as far as what this yield is this year and next year and your averages and all that. But I came up with somewhere between $50 and $75 an acre that you could get on the acre program this current situation. So I don't know. I think that's a real key. I think $5.97 or something like that is the state average, is the average price that they're using on the state yields. And I think you had mentioned earlier that just kind of sets a little bit of a tone as to where the support levels might be.
And we might mention on the acre program that sign up ends on August the 14th, which is, for all intensive purposes, 3 business days because the numbers come out August 12th after statewide yields are established for corn and soybeans. I did have a discussion with Stan Wilson of Illinois FSA on Friday morning about how producers might deal with that as it relates to corn and soybeans and their decision to enter acre because, of course, the statewide yields, no matter which state you're in, is one of the ways that that program is triggered. He suggested that the farmer should be entered into the DCP program, the direct and countercyclical payment, probably already is. If not, and he wants to be, make sure that he enrolls in that. And then to ask the FSA office, the local FSA office, to go ahead and prepare the 2 documents. They're the election and the enrollment documents for ACRE. Go home, get all of the signatures, make them perfected. That means that they're actually correct and they're legally binding. So you have to have legally binding signatures and leave them on the desk at home until you can make the decision to enter the ACRE program. Once you turn in the farm, the acre election piece of paperwork, then the DCP is canceled. And if you don't turn in the enrollment paper along with it before December, before August the 14th, then you could be enrolled in the acre program but not be eligible for payments because you didn't finish the process. So it's a 2-step program to begin with. And then after that comes proving your yields. That won't be, I think, until next year for both, for all 3 commodities, corn, soybeans, and wheat. So that's a little bit about the ACRE program. What are reasons farmers might want to be in the ACRE program? Or do you want to do it the other way around?
Well, I think I want to do it the other way around. I think that when you're thinking about the ACRE program, because of the requirement to actually be in it the entire farm bill for the 4-year period, why wouldn't you want to sign up for it? I think is something that people might be wondering. And you know, to me, I can think of if you're cash renting, you know, if you sign up for the program, you've got your landlord to deal with too in order to be able to sign up for the program. If you plan to sell the land, and the other one, I think that especially if you're elderly, if you've got any kind of health issue, and you are fearful about what might happen in the next 4 years, you have to make your plans. But something that would cause a transfer of property would should keep you out of the program.
Yeah, it's important to note that ACRE is not farmer-specific but farm-specific, right. And so that you have to think of it much more like you would think of an easement or mineral rights or something like that. So when the farm is sold, ACRE goes with it. So if you're in the program, you're in the program for the 4 seasons. Right. One way or the other. We were talking while the weather was on, actually, Bill, just a bit about the ACRE program as it relates to the fundamental side of the subject we were discussing and whether we were at a higher plateau. And maybe it seems that the government's convinced that we're at a higher plateau or it's going to keep us there one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, the corn price at $4.20 on the Illinois state price that they use, or the average price that they're using to figure their guarantees for the state, I think that just sets some type of artificial level there that below that there's going to be some payments if it drops far enough below. And I think that definitely enters into that whole discussion that we had earlier. Just going back to the specifics of the ACRE program, I guess my conclusion is if you're going to sign up for the ACRE program, it looks to me like you should do it for 2009, especially if you're in the state, in the eastern states or a state where you've had delayed planting in that, because your odds, I guess, looking at from a odd standpoint, are probably best this year to receive a payment on the ACRE, and you don't, of course, know what the next 2 years are going to bring.
Certainly, to answer the original question, I think it's appropriate that USDA has recognized the increased cost of inputs on all fronts, and so putting a higher floor potential in there certainly been something that farmer will welcome. But I can see a lot of reluctance in signing up for it this year, and Jackie really touched on a lot of those points, but I think people are fearful of signing up for something that they're locked into for the life of the program, and some people may forgo this potential payout year and see how it works and maybe enroll next year. One downside to it if you do enroll in it, reduces your LDP level. I understand that it also reduces the amount of money that you can receive by sealing a bin and putting it under loan. Now, you're not talking about huge dollars, but it does take the loan rate down to about $1.40 per bushel. So if a farmer wants to enter the program but maybe just dip his toe in rather than diving head first, considering it's farm specific, you could consider doing it on farms where you have no on-farm storage and hold back your farms where you have bins.
That's correct. You don't have to enter the whole you don't have to enter all your acres in the program. You can enter specific farms, and you can actually be in both programs at the same time, by farm, that is. So one farm's acre program, one farm is in direct and counter-cyclical payment.
One other point that I think a lot of farmers had some concerns about earlier until the FSA clarified some things. You are able to use your RMA or your crop insurance.
That is correct.
APH certified yields, and I think that's pretty important from the standpoint of getting signed up and having the proper paperwork.
Yeah, so I guess the important points are here that you might, as a producer or a landowner, want to go to the calculators that are online. There are calculators on the FarmDoc website. There are calculators on the FSA website, Texas A&M's website, Iowa State's website, that you can go stick your own numbers in and see what the likelihood of acre being more beneficial for your farm than DCP or direct and countercyclical payment might be. And in order to get all the paperwork done, and it's mostly a push on the FSA offices as opposed to everybody else, go ahead and sign up for DCP if that's what you're going to do, or you probably already are. Make sure you are. And then get the acre enrollment forms. There are two of them, acre election and acre farm enrollment form, and get those signatures all ready to go. Okay, so we better talk about soybeans. August contract this week had a high of $10.40, a low at $10.05. It settled 11.5 cents higher at $10.21. November soybeans at $9.15, down 8.5 cents. You started a discussion on soybeans before we got into the second half of the program. Do you want to pick that up, please, Jackie?
Why is the difference? Well, when you look at the settlement prices, it pretty clearly speaks to you that we've got very tight stocks, and now there's questions about exactly how big is the ratio going to get between beans and corn? I mean, we've got a really wide ratio. So it keeps on saying to the traders, beans are overpriced on the November contract versus where they should be. You know, and so, you know, I think that's what's capping them.
I kind of like the close on the weekly chart there. Kind of a little bit of a reversal. And I guess just from a November bean standpoint, I think you got support down there at the 881 level, and you got resistance up in 934 area, and we're probably going to kind of test those two levels back and forth.
I see processor bids continuing to fall, so I'd recommend locking in your basis on soybeans in the near term. It is important to note that total crush in June was higher than last year, just by a little bit, but soy oil production was down and stocks climbed, so that indicates sluggish demand on the oil side, not to mention planned downtime that plants always do prior to harvest when they know soybeans don't generally move as fast.
Any final word from you, Wyatt Muse?
Just hold on for the ride. We've had volatility now in unseen levels for a couple years, and I would expect it to continue, so don't get too scared when we push the downside of the market, and certainly take advantage of it when we come back.
Bill Mayer?
Old crop corn, if you have it, you need to keep from getting pushed in the corner as you approach September 1st.
And Jackie Bakes.
Brian, I couldn't agree more. If you've got old crop corn, get rid of it and buy it back with a call.
That's this edition of Commodity Week. It was recorded the 24th day of July. You have a good week. I'm Todd Gleason.